It's Wednesday, January 5th. The only thing worse than a pandemic is a pandemic where no one knows what to do. We start here. The CDC issues new guidance again on what Americans should do if they think they've got COVID-19.
If it hangs out in your mouth and your nose, you may be more likely to have a more mild infection, and you may also be more likely to spread it.
If you're confused, you're not alone. We brought some FAQs to a doctor. Meanwhile, you don't need to stay home from work if your business is shut down.
For every two workers out there trying to find work, there are three available jobs.
The bizarre new economic reality of 2022.
The roads are covered in ice.
And waiting in the snow is annoying. Waiting in the snow for 24 hours is life-threatening.
Many people left their cars stranded there in the middle of the highway.
Why the first major traffic jam of the year became a disaster. From ABC News, this is Start Here. I'm Brad Milkey.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
As we start year three, yes, year three of the coronavirus pandemic, you'd think we'd have all these rock-solid protocols. You always wash your hands when you get home, or you always show your vaccination card at your local restaurant. But if I asked 10 different people right now what body temperature would make them nervous about having COVID, I'd probably get 10 different answers. The CDC says that line should be 100.4 degrees Fahrenheit, by the way. But yesterday, the CDC decided to revise its guidance once again on how people with COVID should isolate from those around them.
There's been a lot of confusion at home over the CDC guidance on quarantining if you get COVID. The CDC recently shortening that isolation period from 10 days now to 5.
So here's where we stand at this point. Say you start feeling sick later today. The CDC says immediately you should presume you have COVID and you should isolate for 5 full days. That's full days. So you start tomorrow, Thursday, 2, 3, 4, 5. You're not seeing anyone else through Monday. Monday night, say you're feeling way better, you don't have a fever anymore, you should be good to go. But the CDC says you also need to wear a mask around people for 5 days after that. What's bizarre here is that in all those instructions, you never heard me say once that you got to get a COVID test. And that is still the CDC policy, partially because it's hard for a lot of Americans to find tests, but more importantly, because one negative rapid test doesn't necessarily mean you're risk-free. The timing and the masks are what are being pushed right now. And as confusing as all that can sound, it's not even necessarily the most basic question I found myself asking about the Omicron variant lately. So we're actually going to start the day by bringing in Dr. Julie Morita, the executive vice president of the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. She was also a member of President Biden's COVID-19 advisory board as he got ready to take office. Dr. Morita is here to answer some questions. So, doctor, I mean, we keep hearing stuff like Omicron is more transmissible, less severe, but we don't always hear that much beyond that. Why is Omicron more transmissible and less severe? Can you just help us picture what it's doing when we're hanging out with people?
Yeah, so Brad, with any new emerging variant, we have to think about both of those questions. How transmissible is it? How serious is the disease that it causes? Does it lead to more hospitalizations or more deaths? And with Omicron, it's no different.
More than 100,000 infected Americans are now hospitalized, more than double the total from early November.
And more information that we're collecting right now, which is still early and preliminary in many cases, suggests that the virus is more transmissible, that more people are getting sick.
The U.S. setting a global record with over 1 million new COVID cases in 24 hours.
But the exact reason why it's more transmissible is not clear. It could relate to the virus itself in terms of where it actually replicates. Does it replicate in the nose or in the mouth more than it does in the lower airways? If it does more replication in the upper airways, like your nose or your mouth, you may be able to spread it more easily. So there's some early studies that suggest that might be the case, but it's too early to say that is definitively the
reason. And so does less damage to your lungs maybe, but then also is you're spraying it all over the place if it's hanging out in your nose.
Right. If it's hanging out in your nose or your mouth, you may be able to spread it more easily. And then we know that the serious disease that the COVID virus actually causes is when it affects your lungs.
We have 40-year-olds that try and walk to the bathroom and get short of breath and collapse, and they need resuscitation.
Serious inflammation in your lungs, pneumonia, respiratory failure, those kinds of things are when the replication happens in your lungs. So if it hangs out in your mouth and your nose, you may be more likely to have a more mild infection, and you may also be more likely to spread it.
The sickest of the sick that we are seeing now are the patients that are not vaccinated.
The other factor that we have playing out right now is that many people within the U.S. have been vaccinated. So over 60% of our population has been fully vaccinated. So that's great. And those people may be more likely to have mild infections. And so that's a good thing. And getting boosted also helps to prevent serious infections as well.
And would the differences in where the virus replicates, I mean, does that affect when you're contagious, how long you're contagious? I'm thinking about people who, so many of us have been exposed at this point. We're waiting on test results for days and days. Is there a sense of like when you're at your most dangerous to others, I guess?
Yeah. So again, it's early studies have shown and suggest that Omicron, the incubation period might actually be shorter, where we were looking at Delta being a little over 4 days in terms of how long it takes for someone to become sick once they've been exposed. It looks like Omicron might be more like 3 days. So it's quicker to become someone is quicker to get sick and also more likely to spread it at that point as well.
Omicron is now estimated to make up 95% of new cases in the U.S. And today, the president telling unvaccinated Americans they have reason to be alarmed.
Some will die, needlessly die. Unvaccinated are taking up hospital beds and crowding emergency rooms and intensive care units.
What does all this mean then when you take a look at, again, preliminary, like you said, but are you getting a sense already of what this means for hospitalizations and how we should think of this virus going forward in hospitals?
Well, what we're seeing is that because of the large surge in cases overall, it's going to lead to more hospitalizations overall as well, just because so many people are getting infected. I think the key thing from my perspective is to look at who's being hospitalized. And what we see is the rates of hospitalization due to COVID infections are primarily to people who are unvaccinated.
30 million eligible children have yet to get a vaccine, and the number of children going into hospitals quadrupling over the last month.
It seems that almost exclusively we're caring for unvaccinated adolescents.
It's five times the rate of people who are getting sick with COVID are actually unvaccinated of those people than those people who are vaccinated. And it's 13 times the risk of death if you remain unvaccinated at this point. So getting vaccinated can prevent infection. Still, it can also prevent serious infection leading to hospitalization. It can also lead to prevention of death. But getting a booster dose is critical as well.
All right. That is Dr. Julie Morita from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. Thanks so much, Doctor.
Thanks so much. It was great joining you today, Brad.
Next up on Start Here, technically winter just started, but this year, every season is quitting season. We're back in a bit. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Have you ever wondered what you would do with an extra hour in your day? I think about this all the time. I'm like, I would be so productive. I'd exercise more, or I'd read a book, or I'd take a nap, like restore myself. We often find ourselves yearning for these extra hours, but the real question is, what would you do if you were making yourself a priority? Well, how about therapy? It can help you discover what's important so you can make the most of your time. If you've ever benefited from therapy, you know how transformative it can be. It's not just for those who have experienced major trauma. Therapy empowers you to learn positive coping skills, set boundaries, and become the best version of yourself. If you're considering starting therapy, you should give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and tailored to your schedule. You just fill out a brief questionnaire. You'll be matched with a licensed therapist. And here's the beauty of it. You can switch therapists if you're not finding the right fit. No additional charge. Take the first step. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/start here today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/start here.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
just the same way we're seeing public health officials who have never experienced these things in their lifetimes, economists and business owners are seeing trends they never could have predicted. And even in a sea of weird data points, yesterday we got one of our most startling numbers yet.
The Great Resignation forced companies to reevaluate how they retain talent as more than 4 million workers quit their jobs.
That's right, 4.5 million Americans quit their job in the span of a month. That is the most ever recorded in American history. ABC's Elizabeth Schulze covers the economy. And Elizabeth, just to be clear, these numbers, they reflect something that was happening before Omicron was even on the radar, right?
Hey, Brad, that's right. So this 4.5 million workers quitting, that was for the month of November. It represents about 3% of the entire workforce. And this is the biggest number that we have ever seen.
I did something big. I quit my job.
You know, economists have talked about this trend throughout the pandemic of the Great Resignation, where we've seen employees leave their jobs really in record numbers month after month throughout the pandemic.
We work holidays, we work weekends, we work overnights.
And one of the things that this latest report reveals is that a lot of the workers who are quitting, they're not just saying I quit and staying home, they're taking new higher paying jobs.
And I knew they were severely underpaying me. So when the job market improved, I decided to see what other opportunities might be out there.
So this data shows us that in industries that are typically low wage, like leisure or hospitality or retail food services, those industries are seeing a very high turnover of workers who are choosing right now to go take higher paying jobs because they're finding that they have leverage and opportunities in the job market.
Rethinking how they work, where they work, and why they work.
Because of how tight the jobs market is right now, there are so many job openings, 10.6 million job openings in the United States, and there are about 7 million people currently looking for work. So in other words, for every two workers out there trying to find work, there are three available jobs. Workers have their pick right now, and they are using this opportunity in this labor market to take advantage of that.
But that sounds great for the workers, except when I show up at my local bike shop, I've had a flat tire for the last 4 days. They've been closed for 4 days because no one's working there. I can't figure out if it's because like they got COVID staffing shortages or because they lost some worker to the bike shop down the road. Like, which of those is the bigger issue facing these businesses right now?
Well, look, it's a little bit of both. We've seen staffing shortages because of Omicron.
COVID cases contributing to more flight cancellations. Hundreds more grounded.
And we've seen staffing shortages because of the labor shortage overall. And this doesn't look like there's going to be any end to this for now, from industries, from airlines to schools to hospitals.
The union that represents the local firefighters says the department has nearly 100 firefighters subject to quarantine or isolation due to COVID-19.
This is going to continue, especially amid this kind of latest surge. So one important point here, Brad, is that the job quits and job openings data, that reflects the month of November. So we don't have kind of real-time data right now for what's happening this moment in the economy. What we do know is that a lot of businesses have been forced to shut down because workers have tested positive or they've stayed home, and it's left businesses with few options but to close.
The Omicron variant has now shut down a couple of the biggest hits and even caused one musical to close entirely.
Flights, school districts delaying openings. And so there are kind of two thoughts from economists about what this means. On the one hand, these closures, they could be short-lived, that they might not have this kind of long-term meaningful impact on hiring or on growth because generally the economy has been better able to cope with the virus as it's gone on. One economist I talked to said each wave of the virus businesses have been able to figure it out a little bit better. But the problem is that this wave comes at a time where we're already seeing this really acute labor shortage. So those staffing problems are made that much worse. And so it could take
Someone's quit their job, they've gone to a new job, and right as they're getting trained, the office shuts down and now there's no one to work.
Exactly. And so the pool of people that they're trying to look for, it's just not there. They can't find workers if they need to find someone to come in and fill in. And so that could actually exacerbate how long some of these closures go on. We could see the recovery take a little bit of time to pick up again. And that's really kind of one of the questions that we're going to just have to watch as this variant kind of continues to wreak havoc here over the next couple weeks or even longer.
Yeah, new job hiring numbers expected out this Friday. Elizabeth Schulze will be watching all that. Thanks, Elizabeth.
Thanks so much, Brad.
State and local governments have had lots of stress tests over the last couple of years because of the pandemic, but every year, there's a more consistent stress test in areas that get cold, how your local officials will deal with the first big snowstorm of the season. Well, on one of the nation's busiest stretches of roads, drivers said that test has officially been flunked.
It's been 3 hours. Not one plow has gone down this highway.
Ain't no telling what time I'll be home. This is crazy.
I've been on this road for 13 hours. We're just at a complete standstill.
What started as a traffic accident in a snowstorm became a traffic jam and then morphed into something else, something more like a widespread emergency. ABC's Kenneth Moten is there right along the I-95 in Virginia. Kenneth, what happened there?
Well, I will say that travel nightmare doesn't even begin to describe what happened here, Brad, because we had hundreds of people, families who were stranded on I-95 for a 50-mile stretch. Some sat there for more than a day.
Temperatures are frigid and many motorists are struggling between keeping warm or shutting off the engines in order to save some gas.
24 hours sitting in the cold in those freezing temperatures with very little food.
People did help each other. For instance, Maurice says he was grateful to Eric, who was giving him a ride.
I told him, get in the car with me, get him some gas. I'm trying to get him as close as I can back to his car.
What we're hearing about is stories of people helping people, because we do these stories every single winter season, Brad, where we remind people to have that emergency pack in your car, a blanket, some food, some water.
You'll want some snacks, a bag of sand, salt, or kitty litter. A snow shovel and an ice scraper are also recommended, along with blankets and extra warm clothing.
We spoke with people who didn't have any of that, and they were just trying to survive there. Many people left their cars stranded there in the middle of the highway, and so there was a lot of work by the Virginia Department of Transportation just to try to get that roadway, to get cars even inching along, but a lot of people were just stuck.
Wait, 24 hours in essentially a traffic jam. How does that happen?
That's a great question. As you said, it was the first big snowstorm really of the season. Yes, it happened on the first Monday of the new year. But you had this system come through and it dumped a lot of snow pretty fast. And then you had a lot of ice.
The roads are covered in ice, not even snow. They did not plow, so it's just one big sheet of ice.
And as those temperatures started to plummet, the sun went down, you had people who were stuck there.
Interstate 95 blocked after 6 tractor trailers wrecked. Traffic backed up for miles.
Initially, I will tell you, Brad, that it all really started when some tractor trailers jackknifed. And then it was just a ripple effect from there. You had I-95 South in Fredericksburg, which is really bad on a good day. Right. But you had the snow and the ice, and it was just a total, total mess. And you had all those cars backed up. And it just really, for lack of a better word, it snowballed.
They're stuck. They're stuck in traffic on the expressway.
Even in the spot that we're here in Stafford County in Fredericksburg, it took us 5 hours to get to this location from D.C. because about 80 roads in this region shut down because of the massive storm and the snow and ice that people saw in this area here. And so, to get people off that roadway, they just tried to open it up, open all, the off ramps, the on ramps, and to get people moving.
I don't have food or drink in my car, so I was more focused on, okay, how do I safely get out of this mess.
Even had U.S. Senator Tim Kaine, who was stuck for more than 21 hours on the roadway, coming from his home of Richmond. He finally made it to the Capitol after 27 hours on this major roadway. And he even said, he had an anecdote about a family that was traveling from Florida that actually stopped and was handing out oranges. And so I think the only thing the senator had to eat in that 27 hours was a little bit of a small orange.
Well, and that's charming in its weird way to think about, right? But at the end of the day, this got dangerous for people. And so who takes responsibility for that?
So many people are asking that question. If you look on social media, people are firing off, pretty angry tweets here at VDOT and the Commonwealth here.
They passed out water. What water going to do this morning? I ain't ate in 24 hours. I've ran out of gas. I called VDOT 6 times.
It could have done better with the storm. It could have done better getting them 6 trailers off the freeway.
And they say, look, the road was not pre-treated because rain would have washed it away. The governor says he didn't call in the National Guard because they were just trying to get cars off the roadway, get the roadways treated, get those snow plows on the roads. And even from where I'm sitting, I see a snowplow train just on these on I-95 right now. No cars, but I see a lot of snowplows who are still at work. And that is the work that, you know, we've seen overnight because they want to make sure that this roadway is open for the morning rush.
All right. Kenneth Moten there along on the shoulder of I-95 right now. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Brad.
All right. One more quick break. When we return, how much salt is too much? It's a brine teaser. One last thing is next.
We've got the exclusive view behind the table. Every day, right after the show, while the topics are still hot, the ladies go deeper into the moments that make the view, the view. The Views Behind the Table podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
And one last thing, there is a clear way to make the roads safer in winter. Put more salt on them ahead of snowstorms, right?
We're pre-treating the roads, and that helps keep the snow from sticking to the roads.
For decades, cities have dumped rock salt and sprayed salty chemicals on roads to keep them from becoming slippery skating rinks. The practice has saved untold lives.
Road salts reduce accident rates by over 78%. So it's difficult to just say, let's stop using them.
But environmental researchers say that salt can endanger us, too.
If you drop salt really close to these bodies of water, it flows into the river and actually changes the chemistry of the water.
A recent review in a prominent journal, Frontiers in Ecology and the Environment, says our winter salt sprees have contaminated freshwater lakes, rivers, even our drinking water.
Spring rains and the snow melt pretty much immediately transport these things into local streams, wetlands, our groundwaters.
These scientists reviewed data showing that in cold weather states like New York and Wisconsin, up to a quarter of freshwater wells, mostly those sitting downhill from major highways, are saltier than the law allows. That is a problem for several reasons. One, too much salt is bad for you. But two, salty water creates a cascade of other chemicals. As it goes through your pipes, salty water can strip lead off those pipes, which is what likely happened in Flint, Michigan.
Put plainly, magnesium chloride doesn't play nice with metal.
So, okay, but what do we do about it? These scientists say there are alternate de-icing strategies like beet juice, but those have their own environmental trade-offs.
Well, certainly a lot less salt and a lot more muscle.
One suggestion is sand, but that runoff still adds nutrients to the lake, a contributing factor in harmful algal blooms.
The best strategy, they said, is to be surgical with how much salt each community needs. Enclose those huge salt piles so a random rainstorm doesn't just send more salt flowing into the ground nearby. And they said, get better plows so you don't have to add all those bucketfuls of salt behind them. But one seemingly boring phrase really sticks out in this review. It says, evaluate expectations for levels of service. What does that mean? Well, these scientists are basically asking, do you really need all six lanes of that highway available during a snowstorm? Shouldn't some roads just shut down?
When we have a snowstorm, an ice storm, try to stay home if you can, or slow down.
If the choice is car travel or drinkable water, they say, maybe we should just keep our cars in the garage and go for a sled. Good luck with that. First snowstorm where people get stranded because there wasn't enough salt on the roads. I'm not sure that mayor is going to have a great re-election campaign. It does make me want to invest in beet juice, though, for some reason. All right, start here tomorrow. Subscribe for new episodes every weekday. I'm Brad Milkey. See you tomorrow.